hello and welcome to the unofficial Unreal Engine podcast, where we talk about all things Unreal Engine and also blue tubing. We're your hosts. My name's Alex, and today my guest Hope is the one and only, my only Hope, Corey Strasburger. Welcome, Corey. So glad you're here.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Alex, for having me.
Yeah, this is exciting. For those unfamiliar with the podcast, please be sure to like and subscribe and do all those fun things wherever you watch or listen. We are going to dive right into the podcast today. We have limited time with Corey, and we want to make the most of it. We're going to start off with our word association. The way this is going to work, Corey, is we're going to say a word, and you can say whatever comes to mind. Sound good?
Sure.
Great. Work.
Fun.
Home.
All the time.
Food.
Fruits.
Travel.
Azores.
Fortnite.
Ah, one word.
Doesn't have to be one word.
Desperate to get Xanadu into it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's great. Virtual production.
There's like a storm of words that come into my brain.
A cloud
of words. Geez, virtual production. Exciting.
Wonderful. And Unreal Engine.
Oh, heart.
Great. All right. And then a few short answer questions. How do you take your coffee?
I actually don't drink coffee anymore, but when I did, it was milk and sugar.
Yeah, I love we've got this trend going on the podcast. This coffee question came from Jacob. He assumed most people would have an answer, and I don't drink coffee. And I feel like almost half of our podcast guests also don't drink coffee or don't drink it much anymore. So I guess we have to start modifying this to be like, how do you take whatever you drink in the morning?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Coffee used to be a go-to, right? That would be like 90% drink it, 10% did. But nowadays, yeah, I think things are changing a little bit.
Yeah. Great. Next question is, what's a book, movie, video game, immersive art installation experience, something that really kind of rocked your world at a young age? I'll give a couple examples. X-Files and Minority Report, just a couple that come to mind. What about you, Corey?
Well, those are pretty fond for me too. Early on, I was like I was into monster makeup and stuff. So oddly, I wasn't into horror movies, but I was into them just because of the visual effects part of it. So I was into Hellraiser and, you know, all those kind of Freddy Krueger movies and stuff like that. But in terms of just pure inspiration as a kid, you know, Goonies, of course. Skateboard movies, you know, I was a skater, so I was in a lot of skateboard movies.
Do you still keep up with skating?
I have two electric skateboards that I use, but it's not quite skating to me. It's just kind of like fun transportation. I still use those, but I don't really skate anymore.
Right. Yeah, I was thinking about our friend Matt Workman and some of the skateboarding virtual production stuff he's been up to. I wasn't sure if you tried anything like that.
Not yet. It's been on my radar. When I was in Texas, I had this big idea of having Blue on the electric skateboard with me in the XM suit. But then Blue would be on some kind of like a hoverboard. That's still in an episode to come. But right now I'm faking it. I'm not doing the electric skateboard thing just because of time. But
yeah.
One day I would like that.
Oh, that sounds amazing. What is your favorite time of day, Corey?
My favorite time of day is both right in the morning and then right towards the very end of the night. Like those are the most peaceful moments where I feel like I'm most connected to work and whatever I'm doing.
Mm. Love that. And finally, what's one of the last times you laughed? Just a moment, could have been a silly joke or someone falling over that really got your gut rumbling.
It was just earlier today, as a matter of fact. A friend of mine, I don't know if you guys know Teflon Sega's work.
Of course, yeah.
He's a big fan of oh my God, he's going to kill me. And so is everybody else. What's the guy's, who's like the biggest like pop hip hop dude?
Pop hip hop. Ooh.
Oh my God, I keep wanting to say Drake, but it's the it's
not it's, Dre.
No, right after Dre. Kanye West.
Oh, Kanye. Jesus. Okay, gotcha. That's okay. He's had a lot of different names.
it just became a block in my mind. Anyways, so he was kind of like turning me on to Kanye because I'd never really listened to him. And he's gave me like, okay, listen to this, 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 and this if you want to experience the full thing. And one of his songs, I don't know if it was Chris Rock, there was some skit in there that really had me cracking up today when I was listening to it. So that was the last time I laughed pretty hard.
That's excellent. All right. And I'm trying to adjust Corey to be not too much like a kid sitting at the grown-up table, if I can. But now I'm excited to just dive into our more traditional kind of interview. I usually like to start by saying, you know, why I'm excited to have this particular guest on. Corey is someone who I've been a fan of for an enormous amount of time. I remember many, many years ago getting my Oculus Rift DK1. And I think one of the first really impressive experiences I saw was a little opera called, I believe, Senza Peso. And it rocked my world and opened up my mind to like all the things you could do with virtual reality and storytelling and theater. And I thought about what like a live performance of like that would be. And I started to keep very close track of this company called Kite and Lightning and followed what they were doing with other VR experiences. I was looking forward to some AR stuff. Obviously, there was this amazing project that was in the works for a long time called Babylon. And then, of course, Corey became famous for all the incredible stuff with Xanadu and Blue, which I follow with great interest, culminating in what was the highlight of my Unreal Fest Seattle experience this year, sitting in on a two-hour workshop that Corey led where we got to dive into one of his projects, which our viewers are going to get a little sneak preview of today, and basically just mess around. Like we, you know, got to create our own camera takes and bring in some live link data. That all that stuff was like familiar to me, but the opportunity to really just dive into the way Corey constructs and thinks about a Blue episode, how he thinks about Xanadu. Also getting this amazing swag was also an absolute delight. So thank you, Corey, for everything you've done over the past 10 years, more than that if we count your VFX background and all those things, as well as very specifically your contributions to Unreal Fest. How was Unreal Fest for you this year?
I mean, it just keeps getting better and better, honestly, for me. I mean, there's the built-in stuff, right, where I get to see old friends. I always meet new people, and it's just a good, enjoyable time in whatever city it's been in. So that just keeps getting better. And this time around, obviously, having my own lab was a lot of fun because it was just a blast leading up to it. And I really enjoyed working with all the Epic people on this project. It's just a refreshing thing, right, because I'm always working by myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were super supportive of everything. We just kept, you know, we were doing like tests and rehearsals, and there's a lot that kind of went into this as we led up to it. So that was like a fun build up. And then, you know, Seattle was awesome. And I just like met even more people. I got to meet a lot more Epic people and in the various departments that, you know, I'm kind of like working in a lot. So that was fantastic because they've been really open to giving me the opportunity to sit with me and kind of work through some of the stuff that like my pipeline and some of the things that I'm running into in hopes to solve a lot of these things. So that alone was worth its weight in gold. But also, you know, the lab was received really well, which always feels good. And what else? I mean, it was just, yeah, it was a great time. I love the pop culture museum that we got to go to.
Oh my goodness. What a surprise.
I know, man. It was just like, you kind of have the idea in your head, but until you're there and you're looking at like early copies of Lord of the Rings, it's pretty badass.
Was there a particular prop, costume, anything like that, that really like blew your mind to see that there?
Well, that early copy of Lord of the Rings, I was kind of like looking at the glass case it was in going, I think I could get that open quicker than they can. No, but that and obviously the sci-fi area was there's a lot of really cool stuff, you know, just kind of reminiscing on some of the old greats and seeing some of those props. Like, I love that stuff.
Yeah. Did you see the Darth Vader from Empire Strikes Back?
Yep.
That was pretty cool.
That was super cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I had no idea going into that we'd actually see all of that during the party. Like, I knew that there was that stuff at the museum. I thought it would all be like locked off or to the side. But Epic continues to surprise us with what they pull off with Unreal Fest every year. This was your second or third Unreal Fest?
This would have been my third.
Mm. And how did it compare to the previous ones?
Like I said, it just each one just keeps getting better, mostly because, you know, I'm like meeting more people. And so each time you get to like run into familiar faces and then meet new people. And, you know, but there's also things in the previous ones like that. The time, I don't know if you were there when they had they opened up the big warehouse of floats. That was pretty mind blowing. the band that took you, you know, I mean, that's a hard thing to top. And so there's some great times in all of them. But I think this one was definitely like number one so far.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. And are you looking forward to Orlando next year? There's a lot of concern a little bit about, you know, heat in June and all that. But there's going to be more of this Disney partnership going on. But yeah, what was your reaction to knowing next year it's June in Orlando?
I'm just now finding out it was in June, huh? I thought it would have been around the same time. I was stoked that it was going to be in Orlando. I grew up just north of Orlando, so I wouldn't say I'm used to the weather anymore, but I'm familiar enough with it because I spent 20 years in that heat. So I'll be fine with that. But I'm glad. I'm stoked. I think Orlando will be fun because I will be able to see a bunch of my old family when I go over there. And I will definitely be taking trips to Disney and Epcot and stuff because I love those places. And I always do whenever I'm over there.
Yeah. Yeah. What an opportunity to explore that more. I went right from Unreal Fest over to Orlando for a little Star Wars thing we were doing after Unreal Fest and was kind of scoping out where I believe the venue's going to be next year. And I was thinking like, you know, it'd be crazy for someone to not bundle this with some of the other amazing things you can do in the area. So, you know, maybe that'll even be part of Unreal Fest. Who knows? Maybe we're going to take over Cinderella's Castle or the Pirates of the Caribbean or something for the Unreal Fest party. I don't know how much longer they can keep one-upping themselves every year, but we'll see.
Well, a trip to Disney would be a pretty one-up. But the other thing, too, I'm sure we'll be able to, like, dive into it closer when it gets here. But I'm a big fan of, like, space and NASA. And NASA's pretty close to there. And that's a fantastic place to go visit if you like space stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a great idea. I mean, there was, you weren't at LeapCon, were you, Corey? That was surreal because the equivalent of the Epic party at LeapCon was underneath the space shuttle. Like, we're just hanging out, having drinks. And we're like, that's a space shuttle right there. That was over in Los Angeles, of course. So, you know, not over in Orlando. But yeah, I also love space and amazing. And we could probably have a whole podcast just talking about space and excitement. But to segue a little bit into your journey into this world, was space like a really large motivator when you were a kid of reaching for VFX and sci-fi and kind of all the things that were possible with computers?
I wouldn't say it was a direct correlation. But space has always been something I've been fascinated by. Ever since I was pretty young, like I got into special effects, but mostly like I was saying through monster makeup, which then led to like computer effects when that transition happened. But space was always the thing I always thought if I wasn't doing what I was doing in VFX, I would definitely be trying to do something with space. And even to this day, I'm like, if I ever retire from this stuff, the VFX stuff, I'm going to go try to get a job at JPL or SpaceX or something just because, you know, even if it's not doing anything that I'm like used to doing, it's just a world that I love.
Yeah. Maybe the things just merge together and we can have, you know, maybe we can have Blue be like the first VTuber who goes to space or something like that. And that could be a really cool way to bring both together. And of course, Blue, who we haven't talked too much about yet, the whole Xanadu world, that takes out a place out in space. Did that also feel kind of like an opportunity to, you know, explore these things that you might not get to do in the real world in a new sort of way?
100%. I mean, that is the core of Xanadu for me. It was just a way for me to do all the things that I really want to do, but don't think that I'll be able to. And going to space was definitely one of them. And obviously, I'm a big fan of sci-fi, so they kind of worked hand in hand. But the cool thing about Xanadu in space is that it's technically right outside our atmosphere right now. So it's a cool way to sort of, I haven't really done it much yet, but as space things were happening, the goal was that Blue is going to be able to go and interact or broadcast or play some kind of a fun, you know, pseudo reality role with that stuff. And that's still on the radar, still stuff I want to do, but kind of missing lots of opportunities that have already passed over the last few years.
Yeah, I can only imagine how much you've got like a wish list of stuff you'd like to be able to do with Blue. And also just even from the purely episodic standpoint, can you give us a hint of like how many episodes are in some stage of like there's a script or some stuff has been shot but not finished, or there's some stuff that might not even turn into an episode, but it's out there?
I would say there's three episodes that are kind of like in the works to some various degree. The continuation of the last one that I did way back, episode 4, where Teflon Sega's character like drank the Xanadu.
Yeah.
I have that script written. I have a bunch of stuff already captured for that and set up. It's my favorite story right now of all the Xanadu stuff. I feel like I just keep getting better at writing and I keep applying the stuff from the last thing to the next one. And so that script I'm really excited about. I also have a Nouns. Yeah, it's like a Nouns DAO. It's an NFT. It's a really crazy world. You could spend two podcasts just trying to dive into that. But I got an opportunity with them. So I have a ton of stuff already built for that. And then I have kind of the next episode to drop, which was meant to be just like a small thing that ballooned into a big thing in typical Xanadu fashion, where I'm kind of telling the story of what happened. Like, I kind of fell off the map for a couple of years because of a health thing. And so this was my sort of creative expression of what, you know, kind of what went down during those 2 years, but Xanadu style. So, and that's turning out really awesome. That's mostly done, except that I got roped into using the Path Tracer for a section that just happens to be in almost every camera angle. And it's just kind of ballooned the amount of time that it's going to take to get it done because of rendering. So,
yeah, because typically you do not use the Path Tracer, right? You can just kind of output directly from Unreal.
Yep. Yeah. And my render settings are pretty lightweight. So like I render out an episode like really fast. I don't even do like overnight renders or any of that stuff. But this one's, you know, to get the Path Tracer, as you know, to look good, it takes a lot of samples and a lot of time. So,
yeah, man. So I'm going to ask you a question now that you can take as much time as you want to answer, because it could be an hour in itself. But we typically like to ask, you know, how did you get into Unreal? And that could be starting with like as a kid, starting to play with earlier software and kind of finding your way across all the thousands of pieces of software you used across VFX, making your way up to Unreal, or however you like to answer that. And also, just because we brought up Teflon Sega a couple times, I want to mention to our listeners as well that today our friends at the WaveXR just dropped the beta for their new app, and Teflon Sega is one of the featured first performers you can actually view in VR, and that's a pretty cool experience. One of my dreams, by the way, Corey, would be to hang out with Blue in VR, so maybe we'll see that happen at some point too.
Oh yeah, that'll definitely happen. That's one of those things that's been on my radar since day one. I got into all of this through VR in a sense, or through AR, and so it's still one of my favorite mediums of all time. And I've been, you know, dreaming. My big dream is to get my full production set up in VR, like the metaverse version of it. Like the idea of being on set, you know, where like you could be playing a character from wherever you are. There's like a director, there's, you know, script supervisor. We're just all in the shit as if we were really there and doing a production as if we were on a real set. So that's the thing that I'm kind of like slowly doing in the background with friends that can sort of like write tools to do these things. And I think most of this stuff's there to be able to do it. It's just a matter of like, you know, I'm juggling a lot of things because of, you know, life dynamics and stuff. So one of these days I'll get to that.
Yeah. You're still very much a one-man army. And very briefly as well, like we should absolutely talk more about that at some point. When we went from doing our annual production of Christmas Carol, going from LiveLink Face to having our actors in a MetaQuest Pro and doing all the eye and face capture that way, the dynamic for them being able to interact with each other in real time, like night and day. So would love to find a way to let you experience that as well.
Yeah, that was, in fact, when they came out with the Meta Quest Pro, I was talking to a couple of the Meta engineers that are on that, and we were working towards getting Blue in there because that was the big missing ingredient. Honestly, it's like getting face capture while in VR. And from their perspective, it was on par with ARKit, and there was very little to have to do. And so it was kind of like right before I kind of got pulled out of the game, so to speak, I was just on the verge of making that happen. And I haven't been able to get back to that since. But yeah, that's the big missing ingredient.
Cool. All right. Back to your journey into learning about Unreal for the first time and now becoming a dynamo at it.
So let's see. I mean, I don't know how far back we want to go. If we want to just start at the Unreal part or the part that kind of even led up to that.
I think it's interesting to go through some of the steps to get there. I know a lot of our listeners are still very early in their Unreal journey, and they feel like, you know, do I need to go to college and get a degree in Unreal Engine? How much can I be self-taught? What other software is useful to know coming into it? I'm pretty sure you're completely self-taught, so I feel like you're also just a good inspiration for people to see like how one thing can lead to another and get to a point where someone can be doing super cool one-man army stuff like you are, Corey.
Gotcha. That helps. I mean, I would say, you know, I started out, like I said, in monster makeup, but I loved movies. I was just absorbed with movies. The making of movies was fascinating to me. And as soon as I was pretty young still, but still going to date me. But like when Terminator 2 came out and things were shifting into this sort of digital render thing, I was just like, oh my God, because I was also into early computers at that point. And so this beautiful thing was happening where I was like, oh, I could do all this stuff digitally. And my first version of Photoshop was like 1.02. Okay. And so I was just sort of learning this stuff. There was like one school in Tampa, Florida that was teaching like animation when I was kind of coming out of high school.
Mm-hmm. Ringling?
It was Ringling. Yeah.
Yeah.
They were
the only
school.
Got a nice relationship now because they're also one of the only schools with a proper VR program. So they're very ahead of the curve with this stuff.
Yeah, they were definitely. Even back then, it was just like there wasn't, and not even in California anywhere. It was just like Ringling. They're the only school there. So I looked into that. But ultimately, I got a job locally doing like animation and stuff for local things. And I was learning like interactive CD-ROM making. And it's kind of like a diverse range of stuff at that point, like desktop publishing and whatnot. And, but I had my heart and soul set on getting out to LA and getting a job at like Rhythm and Hues or Digital Domain or something like that. And, right around when I was 20, I got an opportunity to go out to California for a job I was working on in Florida. And the second I stepped foot in LA, it was just, I just had the greatest week. And I was like, oh my God, this place is amazing. And then 3 months later, I was moving out there with my older brother and a friend. And we didn't have any, you know, we didn't have a job. We had a little bit of money, enough to like get an apartment for a month. And within a short amount of time, like I was applying for all these big studios and I didn't get a job anywhere. This is prior to like desktop stuff, right? Everyone was on these really expensive SGIs or whatever. And I was kind of coming in as like a Mac guy using Electric Image. I don't know if most people won't know what that is, but early 3D software. And I ended up getting a job at a local studio called View Studio. And it was the biggest blessing of my life, I got to tell you, because as I, you know, evolved in LA, I got to know a lot of people that worked at all the studios I wanted to work at. And, you know, they ended up in these little cubicles doing lighting all day long. And I probably would have been okay with all that. But the studio I was at, they had all the highest end everything. They're working on movies, TV shows, music videos. And I had access to everything. And that's where I really got to thrive because I, as a generalist, I'm like, oh, I was doing compositing. I was doing 3D. And they were supporting me with like the latest, you know, Octane SGI machines and software and stuff. I got to work on like X-Files and Star Trek and all these shows where like every week it was like a new effect. Like one day it's like some brain sucking monster guy and next week it's like a car flying off a cliff. And so it really challenged me to know like a lot of different aspects of the tools. And so over those years, I think I really developed like, just a sense of visual, you know, just visual anything, you know, of compositing 3D. And I was doing a lot of my own short films and stuff at that point too, just on the side, but just with actual cameras, you know, because that was really where, I think that was really where my, I mean, I loved all the VFX and stuff, but it was just kind of like making stories and making movies. It was all kind of one and the same. So
what's an early special effects shot that you pulled off in kind of a novel way? Because people assume that, you know, all these workflows, everyone knows exactly how to make anything from, you know, bullets hitting the ground to explosions to fire or blood or whatever. But there's so many different creative MacGyver-y ways to make these things happen. Anything come to mind?
Oh, almost everything back in the day. This stuff I was doing, I mean, I wasn't taught anything. There wasn't any like, oh, this is how people were doing this, because it was kind of at a time where a lot of things were just being invented in a way in digital. So everything from like early projection mapping, where you would just make a bunch of like, you needed this push-in in a city and you just put a bunch of cubes. And now it's just like, you wouldn't even think twice about it. It's been going on. But back then, it wasn't even a thing other than like Paul Debevec, you know, doing that. It was like, okay, but once there was like a tool in Maya, or maybe even Power Animator before Maya, that could project an image from a camera, suddenly it was like, oh, I could do this thing now. And that opened up. So there's, you know, so many things back then were just kind of like just figuring out ways to do it, or just bending the tools to kind of get a thing done.
Yeah. Amazing. All right. And let's keep going. Let's find our way up to Unreal.
So let's see. Visual effects career went on and on and on. And the thing that got me into real time actually was a friend of mine who I ended up starting Kite and Lightning with, this guy, Akrim Al-Hassan.
Yeah.
He, I met him in a crazy way. I won't even get into all that, but he was down in Brazil for a little bit, and he's like, dude, check out this thing I'm working on. He was like showing me the earliest AR, right? Like on an iPad when it first became a thing. I'm going to guess maybe like 2010 or 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't quite get what he was showing me, because it was kind of like online. But then he showed up in LA one day and he's like, check it out. And he gave me the iPad and I did it. And it was just like a magazine cover that popped up a little 3D teddy bear. And my mind just was blown. I was like, oh my God. Like, it just became like, you know, this explosion of possibility. And I just was like, dude, how did you do this? And he did it in Unity at the time. And that was, I immediately just shifted into it. And the two of us just kept making stuff. Like a lot of AR. I don't really have much of it or any of it on my YouTube, but on my old Vimeo channel, this is going back to 2012. I have a lot of like, pretty awesome, even to this day, AR stuff, because we were using early photogrammetry at the time and using a lot of special effects knowledge and baking lighting and all this to get really good looking AR. And I was in heaven. I because even in Unity, like C#, like I like coding also. And so the marriage of like writing code and getting all this stuff to work, the tracking, it was like a blend of reality and virtual. And so I was writing all kinds of stuff. We were making all kinds of stuff that nobody's ever seen the light of day. But we did start pitching. So we would take our AR stuff and we went to like Legendary Pictures. We went to a bunch of studios around town just being like, hey, look, we could make a promotion for your movie. We did a thing for Godzilla. We did a whole bunch of things, even for CW. Like every connection. We actually pitched Disney. We pitched rooms full of people who had never seen any of this at that time, right? And we were making custom stuff. I made a whole Disney experience because the company I worked at called Troika, they're a big branding company. So I did a lot of freelance for them. Disney was a big client. And they were like, oh, we should show them in one of the meetings, you know? So I made all this stuff. I went in there and it was pretty awesome. And everybody was just like, you know, we're on the verge of doing just lots of AR projects. I think we got a handful of real ones. And then one day Akrima walks into the office with a DK1, and I kind of knew that was happening, or VR, and I knew Palmer Luckey and stuff. But the second I put that thing on and was in that Tuscan village,
oh yeah.
Oh man, everything changed again. I was like, forget AR, this is where I'm going to spend the rest of my life building stuff in VR. And that was kind of like the big cataclysmic shift for me. Cause from that point on, I don't think I ever went back. I was ever back in the old school VFX world rendering or anything. I think I just quit doing all that freelance work. Akrima and I were like, let's just do some experimental stuff. And so we started making VR experiences using Unity still in the early days. And eventually, I think we made about two or three experiences using like stereo video. Like we did some pretty early stuff, I thought, in those days. And then Unreal announced that Unreal Engine is going to be for free and the source code was going to be accessible. And in that moment, again, I walk into the office, Akrima is like, we're switching to Unreal.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't want to do it at all because I knew Unity really well and I liked it.
Yeah,
and I looked at Unreal and the interface was like, oh man, this is all archaic. Like, I don't understand how any of this stuff works. But the fact that he had source code access, that was the key. And that was like high five to Tim Sweeney, man, because it took a lot of like gonads to have the best real-time render on the planet, really. And then to give all that source code away with this idea, like with his plan, like that wasn't a common thing back then at all, especially something that was so, you know, like bleeding edge. But what it did is Akrima is an engineer. So he absolutely, like, it opened up a lot of doors for us because he had source code access. It meant like any tool we needed, any roadblock we found, he could create a workaround. So yeah, there was no way I was going to argue with that. It was a little bit of pain and suffering at first, but the thing that kept me going was that inside the viewport of Unreal, it was like the best looking render that you could get, you know, and Unity wasn't really even close to it at that point. So I kind of just struggled through. And you mentioned Sense of Peso a while back. That was the first project that we ever did in Unreal.
That was your first one? Holy cow.
That's how I learned Unreal on that project. So it's, if you actually look at the project itself, it's a disaster. You know, but the outcome turned out pretty awesome. And you know, there's all this constraints of VR and frame rates and stuff. And so it was a rough road. But man, it was super fun. And you know, obviously the project itself meant a lot to me because before it was a VR experience, it was a short film. And so it was kind of like the perfect thing to bring into VR because the story was already sort of there, the music and a lot of the elements. And then it was just like, how do we turn this into a, you know, first person experiential thing? But yeah, that was the beginning of Unreal.
Yeah. I actually had no idea. It started off as a short film. Is that available anywhere?
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
SensePeso.com?
Yeah, I guess so.
Excellent.
I wonder if that's actually still working. Is that still up?
No. I'm going to say no. It doesn't quite work anymore.
Okay.
The navigation is all there, and then the body is just totally empty. But yeah, I would love to link to our users. I was already going to link them to the VR experience, which is still in the Quest store, and then also link them to that original short film because I think it's an absolutely beautiful piece.
Oh wait, is Sense of Peso still downloadable from the Quest store?
It is, at least it is for me. I just downloaded it right before we started chatting. I was going to look at it after we finished talking to each other.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm surprised it still runs on any modern, like on the modern hardware.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's I know it came out before this, but it does list the release date as October 11th, 2016. And there's not a lot of things from that far back that are still available on the Quest store.
Interesting. That's cool.
Yeah, very cool. Great. All right. Well, with the time we have left, a couple things I want to cover briefly. Are you still doing anything in the AR VR space? Or are you mostly in, I guess, like VTuber mode with all the Xanadu stuff?
I'm mostly in the VTuber mode with all the Xanadu stuff. I'm always, it's right on my doorstep, both AR and VR, especially now that AR is kind of resurging. It's still, I have so much love for both of those worlds. And I have so many, like, you know, I only started to tap into the surface on both. and then Xanadu, you know, the Babylon game sort of like took over everything, and then Xanadu has now. But it's a big goal of mine to get Xanadu into VR and into AR. I have plenty of ideas for that. It's just one of the downsides of being a one-man band is that you can only do so much. And, you know, trying to play the algorithm to get more content, but then I want to do all these other things. Like, you know, if I was rich, I would probably be doing VR, Xanadu VR right now, or even Xanadu AR or some kind of AR, because I love those mediums so much. And with the new Apple headset and, you know, all these in the Meta glasses, all these things right on the edge, I'm like, oh, I gotta get in on it somehow.
I can't wait for you to try out the Orion glasses. They're such a trip. Let's chat briefly about the different kinds of mocap methods and performance capture you've used over the years. What was the very first time you were able to translate a body, either your own or someone else's, into a virtual world?
Oof, that would have been the very first baby. There's a in my early YouTube videos that you can kind of see the progression of the babies. And it actually started with face capture. I had not done any body capture in the earliest days. I had an XN suit sitting there for like a year because when we were ramping up for the game, I got one. And then the game just, you know, took on a life of its own. Actually, the baby character animations was so far in the background in terms of our concentration. Like, it wasn't even on our list of stuff to do, like, ever, other than just little, like, movements for the game. And so it became my weekend project, because as I was making these babies, I'm like, oh, my God, I got to see them animated and, like, you know, spitting some stuff, you know? And so that started the whole face capture thing. And then once I got that working, I'm like, oh, my God, this is amazing. Then I unboxed the XN suit, and the first body captures I ever did are the first baby test, where it's kind of combination. I had like a paintball helmet and the iPhone and all that stuff. But to XN's credit, I mean, it's such a great suit. It's easy, robust, and it was nothing to get working. And the HD post process, which just kind of blew my mind to how good ended up being, because I kind of had in my mind that I knew it was an inertial suit, wasn't optical. My expectations were down here. And when I saw the data, I was just like, whoa, this is incredible. So those two things really just kind of became the catalyst for all the stuff that I've been doing since.
Yeah, it feels like the XN suit and the Manus gloves with LiveLink Face serve your needs pretty well right now. But are you kind of keeping your eye on things like, you know, markerless mocap with Move AI and Capture and some of these other techniques out there? Are any of them exciting you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been, you know, in with the Move AI guys since the early days, definitely keeping an eye on that. I mean, you know, optical is to me where it's at. I want to start doing like live stuff. And right now the XN suit, that you need to post process to get that quality.
Yeah.
And so if I can get that or pretty close to it in other ways, that's exciting to me. So Capture, I was over at the Wave XR studios not too long ago, and I was really impressed with how good that looked. And Move AI has just been like making big leaps. So, I don't think it's going to be much longer before those kind of technologies are going to be the go-to thing, just because, you don't have to get in the suit and the positional tracking is there. And, you know, if it's all set up, hopefully, and it's all stable. I mean, the XN suit's really stable, and it's not something that you can just kind of like take for granted, because a lot of these technologies, if you're me and I'm fumbling around with stuff and it's breaking, it'll just, I just wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing if that were the case. So yeah, I'm going to have to wait for it to get, you know, it's a certain level of stability and quality. But yeah, I'm excited about it for sure.
Oh, yeah, I hear you. The Baby Yoda stuff, did that grow out of the work you were already doing with Babylon, or was that coming from a sideways direction?
No, it was kind of a natural progression in my mind. The babies, got up to a certain level. And then somebody came over to the office one day and was like, oh, it'd be cool if you did like Baby Yoda. And it was at the early days of Mandalorian and stuff. And I was like, oh yeah, it would be cool to do Baby Yoda. And so I just kind of on the weekend made that character. And I kind of looked at it as a way to start to tell, to just get out of the baby world a little bit and tell some stories where I don't have to create the whole world and all that stuff. There's already great characters. And that was really where I developed the early parts of my pipeline, because it was just like, you know, here's a music video with Baby Yoda in it, or, you know, the early short film that I did. And it was just, you know, a lot of dialogue mostly, but it was kind of like, okay, I figured out how to use sequencer and how to kind of make it all efficient-ish. And still to this day, I think most of what I came up with in those early days is still the same way I'm doing it, more or less.
Cool. I love it. Want to get you out of here on time, so we're going to do a few rapid-fire questions, and I want to look at the wonderful screen share we have behind you. Sound okay?
Sounds good.
All right. Real quick, what was it like working on Minority Report?
Oh, my God. The absolute one of the best projects I've ever worked on in my life.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Any particular moment or highlight stand out besides the whole thing?
Oh, so, I mean, so many. I'd say, you know, being on set and shooting some of the stuff that we had to shoot for that was definitely a big highlight. The fact that I got to be on a team, or I got to be my own person on a team of five people coming up with, like, what the year 2085, which is originally when the movie was set, what
Wild.
That was going to look like. So I got to do, like, science fiction and sci-fi sort of, like, conceptualization, which was, like, to me, it was hardly any better. And I got to go to the, was it Sony or Fox? One of the studios, and present to Alex McDowell, who is the production designer on that movie, him and his team.
Oh,
and they showed us all the stuff that, like, man, I was like in geek heaven, and it was amazing.
I'm so jealous. That's incredible. Here's a super nerdy question. I have been using the Kite and Lightning Panoramic Capture plugin for many, many years, and it was the first time I noticed a plugin inside Unreal Engine that didn't come from Epic Games. Very briefly, what was the story of building that plugin, and how did you end up handing it off to Epic Games?
So that was all Akrima. He was, we needed to make it for our own stuff. I don't remember exactly. I think we were doing Legendary Pictures hired us to do a VR experience for Insurgent, which was I got to go and direct Kate Winslet for like 15 minutes, which was a pretty awesome experience. But we got to shoot a lot of the actors, and we put together this really cool experiential thing. And in that process, in the middle of that process, Samsung came along when they started. Remember when Samsung had their first like Gear VR. And they were like, hey, can we use this project as a Gear VR thing?
Mm.
And we're like, well, we need to make it 3D video. And so Akrima started to write the plugin so that we could render it for that. And then somehow we had some pretty good relationships with Epic at that time. And I think that they just reached out, or maybe in a conversation that they had, and were like, hey, would you guys be interested in selling this? Because, you know, we could just use it as a plugin and incorporate it into the engine. And as far as I know, it was just a easy, like, yeah, sure. And then Akrima got it to a point, sent them the code, and then they put it in there. I mean, I know a lot of people have struggled with that over the years, because it's kind of like, it was just like an internal tool that barely got polished up a little bit for the exchange. But I guess we thought maybe that they were going to take it the next mile and get it to be, you know, more usable or something like that. But, you know, it was better than nothing.
Yeah, that's so funny. I made a Gumroad course years ago that used your plugin along with NVIDIA Ansel and like a bunch of macro tools to do like 8K, you know, stereo 360 panoramas. And a lot of people bought the course because it was something a lot of people wanted to do, and there just wasn't a super clean, easy way to do it.
Yeah. No, I mean, it served its purpose for a pretty long time, because I think it wasn't until much, much later that some new tools came into the mix, new plugins that replaced it in terms of functionality, and obviously made it a lot easier. I think we were pretty early in on that. And Akrima was a genius. Like, he was able to just figure out how to write a stereoscopic 360 renderer, you know, using all stuff that's beyond my brain capacity.
Yeah. Sounds like you guys were an awesome chocolate and vanilla Lennon McCartney kind of duo. Do you ever do you stay in touch? Do you still have any plans to do anything else together?
I would love to do stuff. I think at the end of Babylon, he was a little bit fried on all this stuff. I mean, we were driving pretty hard, and a lot was like everything was really on his shoulders. So it became one of those things. And I just saw him not too long ago. He's in Texas right now, and I'm always trying to get him going on stuff, but I haven't been successful yet.
Yeah. Do you think Babylon's all boxed up and archived in a vault forever? Or do you think we might see it reemerge in some way, shape, or form someday?
I think it is a big, big, big hope of mine that the story world ends up being. I actually wrote a 6-season Netflix, I call Netflix streaming series based on the lore, the world of Babylon that I think is pretty awesome. I mean, it's kind of like a weird combo of the drama of Game of Thrones, but then this sort of like the way that South Park can like challenge subjects and make it palpable, you know, because there are these little kids and somehow they can kind of pull you into these worlds that other kind of mediums can't. Babylon is this hybrid of those two things. And I would love nothing more than to bring that in as a real production. And I've actually been doing some tests with the babies using metahumans and I'm like, oh my God, it's there, right? The quality level's there. You could do a real production and reel with it. So in fact, this will just be a short little fun story. I had some friends at Weta back in the day, and they were just ramping up to start to do their own IPs or at least do other IPs, you know, versus just these big movies, like TV level stuff. And I was kind of pitching them on this idea. I'm like, hey, if I get the money to do this big series, would you? Because they were the only company at that time that I thought could do it in Unreal, right? They knew Unreal. Almost nobody else did other than like the Third Floor, people doing previs. But I needed a company that could level up using Unreal. And they were like, because for me, it was like, can I put them in my slide deck? Because I was getting ready to go pitch Netflix and Hulu and all those networks. And we had meetings lined up. I had decked the story, the whole thing together. And just as we started to take those meetings, COVID came in. And then one by one, everyone's like, we're getting rid of people in the office this week. Like, you know, so it just kind of like, and that's when I sort of shifted back to like, all right, I'm just going to do, that was a little bit still before Xanadu. We're still pushing away on Babylon at that point, but. Yeah. But yes, I think there's a really rich world there that I hope sees the light in the near future.
I would love that. I remember the first time I saw a little teaser trailer for it, and I was just so taken by the world and the characters and the tone of the whole thing, which I think in some ways does share a certain DNA with Blue and Xanadu. I would love to see that make an appearance sometime. Even if just one of the babies pops up in a Xanadu episode, I'd be thrilled with that. But the more the better as far as I'm concerned. I'm sure it also didn't help when Unity bought Weta, which I think surprised a lot of us because what you just said, like I thought Weta was mostly using Unreal Engine. I didn't think of them as like a company that would be good for providing tools to Unity.
Yeah, that blew my mind. I don't know that anybody saw that coming. That was just like, what the, yeah. And it's kind of weird how it still has all unfolded, but you know, it's business.
Yeah, that's right. All right, let's do our little finale here. So I'm sure everyone who's been watching the YouTube is wondering what this wonderful project is behind us. Corey, would you like to introduce what we're going to take a look at here?
Sure. So this is the world that I got to work with a handful of Epic folks on building. And I don't know that we're going to get enough performance out of this. To actually show it.
Do we have to just stop and start the screen share again, maybe?
Here we go. Okay. It's not too bad. I'll just kind of play through it and maybe something translates on
your end. Yeah, it looks fine on your end, then it should reasonable.
Okay, so I'm just going to kind of play this and talk over it.
Great.
But this was basically a fun project that we put together specifically for the lab that I was giving at Unreal Fest. And for me, it was a way of that it embodied the aspects that we wanted to teach in the class, right? Which was character, motion capture, live link, and VCAM, and then sort of like my pipeline. And I wanted something that was going to be sort of action oriented, because I just kept imagining like, okay, if you're going to come onto a movie set and you're going to learn how to use a camera and you're going to learn some of the techniques of virtual production, what kind of set would you want to be on, you know? And so I just thought like a pod race would be pretty awesome because, you know, it's high speed and you can imagine doing VCAM along this track, which, by the way, I don't know whether you got to do in the class. It was kind of like towards the end, but when you put VCAM on this racing section and you're just kind of like doing your thing with it, it's like a few levels above like normal VCAM fun. So that was like my main idea. And ultimately, that was a way for, you know, people in the lab to go through a Xanadu production and really take a look at like how everything's set up, because, you know, everything that we saw in this section, as you know, having been in the lab, is all in this one sequence. So you can kind of go through and see all the animation of all the cars. You can see all the characters, all the character motion capture. You can see all the visual effects, all the lighting, all the secondary racers. So, you know, I thought it was a cool way for people just to kind of go, oh, this is what it looks like. And it was my goal that people walked out of the lab going, you know, this is actually a lot more tangible than I would have thought. You know, it's because I'm really only using a few aspects of the engine. The engine's vast, right? There's a lot of possibilities with it. It does a lot of things, but I spend most of my time in sequencer and take recorder doing mocap and, you know, sometimes in effects and Niagara and stuff like that. But ultimately I try to get stuff from the marketplace and you're just assembling things. So that was kind of like the idea. And, you know, this race extends out into the desert. Let me see if I can give you guys a better, actually, let me do this.
We got a little bit of lag here. Just very briefly. To your point, I was so thrilled just to see, as you say, like how accessible this was, to see the whole project organized so well, color-coded, all these different sequences and nested sequences, that it was such a WYSIWYG kind of thing, where I think a lot of people assume like, oh, it probably looks very pre-Visi, and then Corey does a bunch of stuff in post-processing with like After Effects or Premiere or Nuke or whatever. But no, it was all here, all in this one project. So what a treat to get to explore this.
Yeah, cool. I mean, all of my Xanadu episodes are just rendered straight out of Unreal. I don't do any post anything really other than just sound and music in Premiere. And that's, to me, that's a testament to like, and one of the reasons why I can do it fast, but also the power of Unreal, like the post-process volume, being able to do really great color grading and kind of like all the little sweetening things that you would want to do to get that last little inch out of it. And you can kind of do it all. Even some of my post, like my After Effects tricks that I would do to kind of richen up the final image, I actually turned into a post-process shader. And boom, it would just save me yet another step. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, it's probably going to make people sick looking at this, because even on my end, I think it's pretty steppy.
we'll show it a little more in the background there. What a delight. Again, love that workshop. Hope you get to do something similar again for Orlando next year. And by the way, for anyone wondering, so yeah, the idea next year is that Unreal Fest North America and Unreal Fest Europe are going to be swapping. So Unreal Fest Europe will be in Stockholm, Sweden. Pretty sure that's public information now. And that'll be in September. And then Orlando will be in June. So that should be great. Corey, I want to thank you so much for dropping by the podcast, making time for this. What a treat. Been looking forward to this for a while. to end the episode, I think we did this a little bit when you joined us for the season finale as well, but is there anyone you would like to give a shout out to who people should be paying more attention to?
Oof.
The or funny anyone thing is, that has helped inspire things. You or, yeah.
There's a bunch of people that come to my mind, but I'm so bad with being able to say like, oh, this is their name. Man, I could give you a list afterwards, because there's definitely some cool sort of emerging things on Instagram that I'm following where I'm like, people are doing some pretty awesome stuff in Unreal that I get excited about. I just couldn't tell you like, oh, it's so-and-so or so-and-so.
No worries. Yeah, I am perfectly happy to grab a list. We'll throw that into the show notes. We'll have a Corey's playlist of awesome people/clips to check out. People can find you on LinkedIn. Corey's website, much like my own, is dated all the way back to like 2013, 2014. So don't look for him there. And thanks again, Corey. We'll also link to the Xanadu YouTube channel and all that fun stuff. Any final words of inspiration or encouragement to those budding artists out there in the world right now?
Oh man, I would just say just stick with it and spend as much time in the engine as you can making stuff, because you know there's it's just like an upwards path, you know, one way or the other. Even if you have little stumbles along the way, it just gets more fun and more fun. And with all the things on the horizon coming in here, now's the best time to just really dig in and start making stuff, because it is going to actually get easier, but you're going to want to be on the front of that curve, I think, as all these tools kind of start to flood in. And I think the big key is really trying to find artistically like what your style is or what your voice is, you know, like, and that's stuff that just, I think, real life has to kind of play a role in, because at the end of the day, it's like a lot of people are going to be able to create stuff because the tools are getting easier. But it's the stuff that when you're really being able to express yourself in some way or connect with something that's meaningful to you, like any good book or movie, you know, that's the stuff that tends to rise to the surface. So not to forget about that, because to me, that's sort of the root of art. And then the tools you use is the way to express it. So
that's amazing. Very well put. Thanks so much, Corey. Looking forward to chatting again soon. And we look forward to every new thing you could possibly release into the world. Cheers.
Cool. Thanks, Alex. I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. All right. Welcome to our very first Stinger post-episode recap and other things. That was fun, right? Was I fangirling too much? I feel like I was fangirling too much. That's okay. Corey's amazing. I've admired him for a very long time. And if I'm going to fumble my words a little bit over someone as cool as he is, so be it. A lot more I'd love to talk to him about. He did have to rush off to a flight, so hopefully we'll get him back for a part two, part three, part two and a half. We did have him for the season finale. Grateful, of course, for whatever time we can get. Though, honestly, between you and me, my new life goal is maybe to get him and Blue and the world of Xanadu into our whole multiplayer, full body capture, VR stuff that we're building as part of Christmas Carol, and then for Halcyon VR and all these other things we're up to. I would love to regale everyone right now with the stories of everything from the 2 weeks where I was traveling, from MetaConnect, where I got to try the Orion glasses, to Halcyon. I can't even get the order right. From MetaConnect in Menlo Park to Seattle and Unreal Fest, got to visit Valve's office and cool stuff like that. And see an old friend from elementary school and go to a racetrack where someone who's been racing for 39 years did it for the last time. And then, of course, shooting over to Orlando and doing the Halcyon VR stuff over there. But I actually gave a nice, lovely recap while walking my dog over on my YouTube channel. So I'll just throw a link to that for anyone who wants to hear me talk about what a delightful 2 weeks that was. But I feel like I should promote upcoming travel here. So some things that are coming up include what's behind me. Let's use our fun overlay feature for anyone watching the video feed. Unreal Day in Belgrade, Serbia on October 24th. I met the organizers for this back during Unreal Fest Prague. I know so many Unreal Fests this year, and they said they wanted to bring me over, you know, pay all the expenses, give me a nice flight, nice hotel, all that stuff. Hey, there I am. And there's a lot of cool people here that I'm excited to meet. We're going to be chatting, of course, with 3Lateral. This is kind of like a semi Epic Games sponsored thing as well. There's an Unreal Jam I'm going to be a little judge for. I'm giving a workshop. I'm giving a short talk. It's going to be cool. If you happen to be nearby Belgrade, Serbia, then by all means, come stop by and say hi to us during this. I'm actually headed to Serbia on the 21st, a week from today. I'll be like just arriving right around now. I'm recording this Monday night on the, what's today, like the 14th or something like that. And yeah, it's going to be great. Looking forward to it. Never been to the area. Yeah. And here's some very cool people that we'll get to hang out with and do good stuff. All right. Next thing up on that list of things coming up is I'll actually be going from Belgrade. And then that next morning, flying over to Berlin, I'm going to visit a couple studios, thanks to my friend Tank, who's going to kind of host me over there. And I'm going to see my old friend Chris Nichols from the CG Garage podcast, as well as Vlado, the amazing Vlado, and Daniel Thrawn, all these guys who worked on Ray Tracing for the Win. They also, of course, have the CG Garage podcast and Martini Giant, where they talk about movies. I should probably do a screen share so it's not just me reading all the cool stuff back here. Yeah, Project Arena is also Chaos's new virtual production stuff. Yeah, it's in competition with Unreal Engine. So what? Competition's good for the market. I just love these guys. Looking forward to hanging out with them more. Look, a prize draw, two signed books. And it's been a long time since I've been in Berlin. 2008 would have been the last time. So what year is it now? 16 years later. That's wild. I could have a driver's license if me not going to Berlin was a sentient being. Anyways, gonna check that out. And then gonna go from Berlin over to Vienna. Gonna head over there, I think, on the 27th. And in Vienna, also thanks to Tank, I'll be receiving a free ticket to go to AWE Europe. I did AWE in North America back in 2022. I thought it was a fun event, but didn't really get any new business or anything like that. I gave a couple talks. I did feel like it wasn't a great event for speakers. I think they completely overbooked the speakers, and I think this is actually common for AWD, not just in 2022. So most of these talks had like very few people in it. So I experienced that in both my talks, and I will not be speaking over here. So I'm just going to hang out and feel spatial, and I'm looking forward to seeing some friends and collaborators and yeah, a lot of folks that I typically wouldn't see because they're over in the Europe side. There's a cool expo floor. Let's take a quick look at some of the agenda stuff. They do have things divided into tracks, which is quite nice, but I think they also probably have, again, kind of way too many speakers. Those tracks are certainly a good way to help people decide what to check out. At Unreal Fest, by the way, I saw like no talks at all because I was so eager to just hang out with all the people there. And that's kind of how it goes. Same thing in MetaConnect and then Halcyon. I was showing VR stuff most of the time, so did not actually see much of the other talks going on there. Again, more on that in my YouTube. There's David, there's a collaborator. I mean, real quick, let me just give a couple quick shout outs to people. He is a super amazing XR social for anyone who is looking for XR subs over on LinkedIn. I try to share a lot of her things quite a bit. She's great. Anthony, I've known for many, many years. He runs the blog The Ghost Howls. We've hung out. We got to hang out in Venice together at the Immersive Architecture Conference in 2018. And I actually did see him at AWE in 2022. Lovely, lovely guy. Who else do I know? We've got, David Gotchfeld, who is a good friend and collaborator going back to 2018, ever since he, left New York and went over to York. So not New York, but York. And this is also part of the Royal Central School of Speech and Drama. So we're doing some fun stuff together and he's going to give a talk that I'll have some presence in. You know, I did like an interview and a couple stuff for what they'll be talking about, which I believe is called Who's XR For Anyway. Alex Rule, I know, she's super, super cool. Orion Barr, of course, is one of the founders of AWE in general. There's Lisa. So Lisa will also be speaking with David. Just did my interview with Lisa earlier this week, which was really just a good discussion. Like, I wouldn't mind that just being released as a podcast episode. And their talk is called Who's XR For Anyway. And yeah, who else? I'm sure I'm skipping some people. Yeah, Chaos Princess, amazing XR social club person who I've known since the High Fidelity days when we were doing XR social stuff in there.
and performance and all that. She was just kind of at every single social event in VR, just a real mainstay of all the amazing things happening. Anyone else I recognize? Oh, Catherine Henry. Catherine, yeah, Catherine and I go back long, long time in New York doing stuff with volumetric capture. She's with Media Monks and did a bunch of stuff, created a bunch of events in New York City. Really super smart strategist in the space. I didn't know she was going to be there. We'll have to hang out again. And anyone else? Those are the major ones I recognize. So sorry if you're one of the speakers and you're like, wait, Alex, we know each other. Why didn't you mention me? I am a little bit sleepy. And in addition to all those things, I've of course need to get back and do some trick-or-treating with my kids and all that on October 31st. So this is going to be kind of a whirlwind of travel, and the flights aren't always as like direct and clean as you would think. So I'm going to have to figure out how to like get back to Belgrade from Vienna before I take a JetBlue flight back to New York, because it's the only way I'll get home in time for Halloween. Anyways, very complicated, but it'll be worth it, I'm sure, if I don't die. Also going to be showing a lot of cool demos. I don't know if I mentioned that in my little recap of the previous 2 weeks, but yeah, we did lots and lots of showing things for like our partnership with Sony and all the Makopi stuff, as well as just various things in VR. Some stuff desktop VR, some stuff standalone. And oh, speaking of SVVR also was super, super cool. I'll just mention that. That was a really fun talk to give. I'll probably do something similar for Unreal Day. So one of those I think will be online at some point. I haven't actually asked the Unreal Day folks if that'll all be recorded. My workshop might be kind of hard to do because that's like very hands-on, but at least my shorter talk hopefully can get out there. The other thing I wanted to point out was, yeah, earlier this week, I did some free training for getting started with Apple Vision Pro in Unreal Engine. I've had kind of like my private Discord channel through Gumroad, where there's like a Google Drive and a Discord. And that was really meant for like anyone who wanted to be right at the bleeding edge of what could be done with Apple Vision Pro and Unreal Engine. And it assumed that people would be okay with like, let's break stuff and figure out how to get things working in really janky ways. Now that things have started to level out a little bit, I was like, okay, let's give a live session where we actually help people get set up with Apple Vision Pro in a basic way. It was a rousing success. I heard a lot of great feedback of people who were unsuccessful getting Unreal Engine to work with Apple Vision Pro until our little 2-hour session earlier this week, and it went well. Why am I scrolling down? I was going to say, I guess, sign up down here at alexcoulombpresents.com if you want to join the newsletter. But also, we're going to have our very first paid class. This is the first non-intro class we're doing. It's an intermediate class, so we have at the top of the banner here, sign up for part 2 of Apple Vision Pro for Unreal Engine, November 7th at 12 p.m. So that'll be a week after I get back from travels, and you can click on register. And I'm using this service called Ko-Fi, thanks Marshall Nowak for setting this up for me, as a simple way to let people buy things for this live training. And, you know, I've got like a little shop page here right now. Feels kind of Patreon-y, but I think it's a little bit less expensive. Anyways, that's all good to go. ko-fi.com/alexcoulombpresents. And you can find the training there for our next 2-hour session, which will also come with some other useful stuff like an Unreal Engine project. And we'll go over some like gestures and things like that. Okay, this was a longer stinger than I was expecting. But if you're still listening, comment below, kerfuffle. Great. That's a word that will tell me that you're still listening. Did you hear me? That word, again, was kerfuffle. Thanks, everyone, so much. Please be sure to like, rate, comment, subscribe, spread the word. We're on all the social media platforms. Thanks to Vikas Reddy and Gustavo and everyone at the Light Twist team for keeping the studio savvy. And also thanks to Alan for being our podcast producer and making the audio and video all look and sound great. And see you all next time. We've got a couple other special guests coming up. It's turning out to be a pretty awesome season 3, folks. And if anyone has questions, by the way, I keep meaning to mention this. If anyone wants us to answer questions, I've been thinking about doing like a UE tips kind of segment or something like that. So if anyone wants to specifically say, can you please talk about XYZ on the podcast, please do send an email to unoffunrealpod@gmail.com. Again, that's unoffunrealpod@gmail.com, and that should find its way to us. OFF. Yeah, and that's it. I'm done talking now. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Goodbye.